Shalom Aleichem Chevra. Okay, so today we're going to, the shiur is going to be a little bit shorter, and I don't know, halacha lemaisa, but a little bit less lumdish and abstract, and a little bit more dealing with a very concrete, real practical question that is related to what we've been learning, but stands on its own as well, in terms of sleeping in the sukkah. So here's the plan, God willing. Today, sleeping in the sukkah is very easy to keep track. Tomorrow, eating in the sukkah and drinking. So that's going to be the plan, and that's going to be halacha lemaisa. Figure out, practically speaking, what has to be in the sukkah, what ought to be in the sukkah, and so on and so forth. And the last day in Mirat Hashem, we'll talk about the unique mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah on the first night. So that's going to be the plan. If it rains, or even stair, do you have to go back out, do you have to wait, all those kinds of issues, which is pretty practical and pretty important to the Zigus as well. Okay, so we're going to start with a major sugya we've already seen parts of, but we're really going to tackle it properly today. So we already said yesterday, for those who were here and for those who are not, that there are two basic requirements that must take place in the sukkah. Achila and Shena, right? We had a machlokas, which is more important, or which one we think of first when we talk about the mitzvah of living in the sukkah. There's no mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah, we've already determined. The mitzvah of dwelling or living in the sukkah, right? That's, if there's anything we've established, that is it. So we saw as well, or we said as well, that there is a chiluk, there's a distinction between the two. That whereas when it comes to eating, what's the halacha? There's a distinction between achilas, right, excellent. Achilas arai, temporary, quote-unquote, eating versus more permanent, more chashavi eating. That there are certain things that must be eaten in the sukkah, and there are other things that maybe would be ideal to eat in the sukkah, but there's no obligation. When it comes to sleeping, the Gemara establishes that that is true, being with regard to achilas kava, being with regard to achilas arai. That appears in the Gemara on the Chof Vav Amud Aleph. The Gemara says as follows, ochlim achilas arai chutz la'sukkah, that one may eat a temporary seuda, as it were, outside of the sukkah, or a temporary meal. V'chama achilas arai, we'll have to come back to this tomorrow, God willing. How much constitutes a minimum amount, the shear of a temporary achila? I'm Rav Yosef, tarte otles be'e. What are be'e? The ayin becomes, excellent, becomes a tzadi, right? How do you know this? Because some people call maseches beitza, maseches be'a. Anyone know why? You'll forgive me? What? Well, yes, Lashon Naki is right, because it became common in Eastern Europe to refer to, right, to one's, right, to that part of one's body as beitzim, right, testicles, beitzim. So therefore, Lashon Naki, so it became common to say be'a, right, others say beitza. I have a raya, right, that I actually Rabbi Wasserman, I once spoke about this topic with your grandfather. And he told me that this is something that became common in the 19th century in Europe. This idea, in particular, that that pizza became associated with the private parts of a man's body, and therefore it was around that time that it became common to start calling maseches beitza maseches be'a. And because we talked about it, because Rabbeinu Chananel, at the beginning of maseches beitza, you should call maseches beitza, you'll forgive me, Rabbeinu Chananel, and I was what the raya was from Rabbeinu Chananel, because Rabbeinu Chananel has a poem at the beginning of maseches beitza, and he says something like, but bechvod or something like that, gidol ha eitza naschil maseches beitza, and it doesn't really work if you say be'a. I mean, you can try, but it's kind of, right, it's just not the same kind of ring. So I was discussing this with your grandfather, and he told me, he said that's right, because it wasn't common, at least, like, it existed perhaps in the vernacular, in like in theory and language, but it wasn't common usage, and that became common in Eastern Europe. So the fact that in time of Rabbeinu Chananel they called themselves beitza is not necessarily a raya that in contemporary times, or at least in Eastern Europe in the 19th century, you should call it maseches beitza, which I think is interesting.
Right. They don't speak Hebrew.
In the Ivrit, it's not. In Israel, it's very uncommon to say be'a. It happens, but it's much less common than in America, I think.
Should be more common.
I hear that. I think it was like a Yiddish, Eastern European thing, and that had generally had more influence. It's in yeshivos. It's not uncommon in the yeshivos, right? So this is Beitzi, that's right. So Rav Yosef says that the shear, this is very interesting. According to Rav Yosef, you could eat the size of two or three eggs, and you would still be able to eat outside the sukkah. Right now, what kind of food? Is he talking about hamotzi? Talking about mezonos? Is he talking about shagol? Right? What kinds of foods are we talking about over here? It's not clear, and that's what we're going to have to come back to. Okay. So Amar li Abaye vazim sagin sagi leil inish b'hachi v'havale su'udas keva. This is, wait a second, says Abaye. Sometimes in sagin, literally sagi, it's enough, sufficient. There are times when it is enough for a person, that's his entire su'uda. And he said, two or three eggs, right? That's literally an entire su'uda. So the Gemara says, that's obviously su'udas keva, and therefore that requires a sukkah. Elam rabaye, kedetoim bar beira v'ayel kala. It's as much as, right, a lior, it's almost exactly what you just did. You know, a little snack right before shir, that's exactly the shir. So whatever lior just had to eat right before we were learning, right, that's it. Kedetoim, right, it's just like, you're a bar beirav, right? You're a member of the yeshiva. It's unbelievable. I love how you demonstrated this halacha right before. And va'ayel kala, and you went to the shir. It's unbelievable.
It's the only reason I would eat.
It's truly, truly inspiring. Truly, truly inspiring. Okay, it's good. Gedra kalvachomer, right? If it's a kiyum to eat immediately before shir, so eating during shir proper. Kalvachomer, rosh kalvachomer. Beautiful logic. Very, very good. Look what he learned in yeshiva. Unbelievable. Okay, says the Gemara Vayter. Tanu Rabbanan, we have a brisa. Now we transition from achila to shena as well. Okay? And this is very important sugya, because this is relevant to, right, not just eating in the Beit Midrash, but by the way, there's a whole sugya of sleeping in the Beit Midrash, and there's a whole sugya in sleeping late in Shabbos morning. There are many who are makbid on this, and they call their shuls Sharei Shena. This is a very relevant topic to all the above. So anyhow, the Gemara says, you never heard of anyone who overslept and called said the Didavan and Shena? Shari Shana. What? Okay. You know, yeah, like you have to be, it's like a rare breed, because you have to be like stark enough to know, say, Shari Shana, but you still. It's an unusual kind of category. It reminds me of the guys who were in high school, and there was one guy who refused to wear his tefillin. He didn't want to wear his tefillin. And Rabbi Adler, the principal at TABC, went over to him and said, what's going on? So the kid said, well, we know that there are two plausible ways for Mashiach to come. One way is that we fulfill all the mitzvot. The other way is that we're so sinful that Mashiach has no choice but to come. He says, Rabbi Adler, with respect, we're just not Klal Yisrael. It's not at a point at which Mashiach can come if we all fulfill the mitzvot properly. Elamai must be the only way I can bring about Mashiach is if we don't perform mitzvot, and that's why I don't wear a tefillin. Okay. What would you respond? What? Okay. You have to be like, that takes that same special, that's the Shana Shana combination. Okay. Okay. Tanu Rabbanan, who's battling? Let's go. Tanu Rabbanan, says the Braisa. The aim Yeshena Meir is like, come on, Rabbi Sansky, I didn't come all the way in from Center City for you to talk. Jokes. Okay, I came to Antara. The aim Yeshena Meir Sarai Chutzosuka. So it says, right, the halacha is that we may eat Achila Sarai Chutz Lasukka, but we are not permitted to sleep a Shina Sarai Chutz Lasukka. By the way, the Pashut Pshat in the Gemara is, would you say the following? Could there be any sleep that one could theoretically perform, you know, permissible Ashna and Sukkah is outside of the Sukkah? Right, is there any such sleep that exists? What would you think based on the Gemara? Okay. So Pashut Pshat in this Gemara, not overthinking it. Pashut Pshat is no, right? I mean, right? There's Sudas Kevin, there's Sudas Arai. And one you have to eat in the Sukkah, and one you don't have to eat in the Sukkah. And there are two kinds of Shena, it would appear. It's Shena Skeva and Shena Sarai. So even Shena Sarai needs to take place in the Sukkah. Sounds like that encompasses everything. And that's one view among the Achorim. There is another view, however, that the Mishnah Berurah cites that if it's literally a minuscule catnap of somewhere in the order of 30 to 60 seconds or so, that it would be permissible. However, right? That's not so. It's not beyond the pale of reason, right? It's possible that you may have done this at some point in your high school career.
Not deliberately.
Possible, not.
Not deliberately.
Not likely, certainly not deliberately, right? And it's called, in halacha, there's a category, it's kosta, it's called misname. Right? Which is like kind of. Right, you know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah, like you're just nodding off a little bit. So that there's actually dispute among the Achronim as to whether or not Misnanim is different than a Shena Sarai, which is an interesting aside, but basically, Shenas Arai is also basically sleeping as Asur in pretty much all circumstances. Okay, so the Gemara says, my time, huh? So the Gemara is going to give two explanations as to why there's a distinction between eating and sleeping. So let's see what the Gemara says. Am Ravashi, Gezira Shema Yiradeim. What does Ravashi say?
It's a Gezira, so that you shouldn't go, go to sleep. Yiradeim.
Okay, so good, excellent. So now to unpack that. Okay, good. So if a person goes to sleep for, finish the sentence, for a Shenas Arai, what might come to happen? Right, it might accidentally, whatever the shear, whatever exactly the distinction is, not 100% clear, between Shenas Arai and Shenas Keva.
It doesn't.
Right, so in theory it would have been allowed, but it's a Gzera Midravana unless this turned into a Shenas Keva. So it's a Gzera Midravana. Right now, what is the distinction between the two? It's not 100% clear. If it mattered lemaisa for us, there are other sugyos in which there is discussion as to what a shenas keva is, what a shenas arai is. Go ahead.
Whether it's quantitative or qualitative, it's just time. If keva is calculated by
you're saying is it just like an amount of time, or is it like how much REMs? There's a quality to the sleep. I'm not saying the Gemara would have said that.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's true. And like in theory, you couldn't allow, but that's very hard in practice. That's what we generally assume, that it is a certain amount of time, because it's just very difficult to measure. But yeah, conceptually, you could have imagined that it might there might be a difference between different qualities of sleep. Where else does this matter halacha lemaisa, if not with regards to sukkah so much? Because either way, it's us or lemaisa. Where else does it matter whether you have like a very short amount of sleep? Maybe tefillin's going to come up here. It's a possibility. Good. We're going to see that. Good. Netila. Good. What do you mean?
If you were asleep for a certain amount of time.
Good. Okay. So like the all-nighter, all the shavuos and all the all-nighter shavuos. So very much are dependent on this. How long did you sleep? They asked the guy, right? So you have to ask the guy, how long did you sleep? And there are different shitos. What do people usually ask? What do they say?
At least four.
Not 4 hours. No, much less. 40. 40 minutes, you're going to say. I've heard a half an hour. That's a common sheet among the poskim. Not everything clear. There's some dispute about it.
Kid Isaiah told us stop this year. He did the break with the Torah.
Yeah.
And then Israeli came up to him after. He's like, next year I'll be with us.
Next year he'll be with us. Did he just like, right, snoot and then say chutznik? Like, just to finish making his point. Okay, so, anyhow. Okay, so Gzera Shema Yiradim. So it really does matter. Now there is halacha, but whatever exactly the definition or distinction between Shenas Arai is, right between Shenas Arai and Shenas Keva, one will lead to the other. Amrali Abaye, Sabaye said to Ravashi, Eloha Desanya, that which we have in a brace. So Yashin Adam Shenas Arai Bitfilin, okay, so this is your tefillin case, that a person is allowed to sleep a temporary sleep with tefillin on, Avalo Shenas Keva, is by the way, at least at the time when people used to spend much of their days wearing tefillin. Right? There was not a Gemara, that was something that was very common. So, or that's the sense at least you get from the sugyos. Right? So the Gemara says, wait a second, if we have a chashash at a person who starts off sleeping, a temporary sleep, that will automatically accidentally become a permanent kind of sleep, a shenas arai will become a shenas keva, we should have the same gzeira with regard to filling it. That's not what we say. We say that you are halach l'maisa, even midrabban permitted to sleep a shenas arai with filling on, so we should have the same gzeira. Am Rav Yosef, Rav Eloi, give me the following answer, bin moser shenas. What does that mean? Literally, gave his sleep to others. What does that mean? Say, I hereby forfeit. I'm giving you half an hour, lady. Enjoy. You'll add it to your time in yeshiva, and this way you'll be able to get off without.
He told others to wake him up.
Okay, excellent. Very good. Yeah, he pointed a shomer. Very good. Okay, Moser Shinas Lachirim. He said to wake me up. This, by the way, is very relevant, right? A human alarm clock is a very common phenomenon among poskim for certain matters. Certain mitzvos you have to perform at a certain kind of time, but if you have someone else to remind you, so then perhaps it's permissible not to light Hanukkah candles immediately at Shkia or Tzeis or whatever time exactly this person is lighting, because they're waiting for some family member to come home, or whatever it might be.
To that extent, to like alarms on your phone.
So there's a big discussion among the poskim. Pashup shot is, it seems logical that it should. It's not 100% clear, but it does seem logical indeed that should work. There's some discussion about needing to remind your friend, someone else needs to remind your friend, like a backup to your backup, that kind of thing. It would seem that an alarm clock addresses that, because it's hard for alarm clocks to forget to go off.
It seems that alarm clocks are more trustworthy than human alarm clocks.
Thus, people.
Because like all the time, it's like, I need to get to Shockers because my drift didn't wake me up.
Yeah, what? Right. It depends. Oh, the sleeping might be different. Like an alarm clock to remind you of it, so it might be different than an alarm clock to wake you up from sleeping also, in that regard. And you can always turn it off, but there's greater incentive typically to press the snooze button. Right, or what have you.
Then the alarm clock's reliable if you don't press the snooze button. But if you do press the snooze button, something like that.
Right. Okay, so the Gemara says, "Most Hashanah Salachim." What's the Gemara's answer? So, right, let's just talk this out.
He made a human alarm clock.
Who? Where? Let's just talk out. What?
Telling kids.
Right. Excellent. Good. So, Gemara says like this: in a case of a Shenas Arai, or Bichoshesh, it will become a Shenas Keva. The Gemara seems to say, "Well, it depends." In the case of Tilan, he appointed someone as an alarm clock, right? So, since he appointed a human alarm clock, therefore, there's no chashash that he's going to sleep. But in our case, he did not appoint a human alarm clock. And therefore, we are concerned that Shinas Arai will become Shinas Keva, and that's the issue. What might one deduce?
Why wouldn't it be? Why wouldn't
it just happens to be the scenario was different. It just happened to be. But according to this, it would appear, it's really the same din by Sukkah as it is by Tefillin. According to this line of the Gemara, it would appear that if I want to get a Shinas Arai, it will be permissible even in a Sukkah, right, or outside the Sukkah, around Sukkot, as long as I appoint my human alarm clock, right, and maybe a real alarm clock nowadays as well. So that's what the Gemara seems to assume at this point, but then the Gemara is going to reject that. Says the Gemara, Maskif flavor of Mesharsha, right? Maskif, right? Says, jumps all over him. Arvich, Arva Tzarech, a classic line of the Gemara. What's Arva Tzarech? You find this in a number of different places, right? And similar line by Chaver, right? What's an Arva? An Ariv, a guarantor. Right? That's exactly what you're saying, right? Who's going to be the Shomer of your Shomer? Who's going to remind your reminder? Right? It's going to be the alarm clock for your alarm clock. So in other words, he rejects this. So the Elo, Amar Abba Barachan, Rabbi Yochanan, B'meniach Rosho B'im Birkavas Inan. What did he do? Like this, okay? It's pretty close to the classic yeshiva pose. The classic yeshiva pose is what, right, is on table, right? But this is, right, bean beer cups. A little bit different, but it's relatively close. Okay.
Oh,
okay.
It's also, right? It's like if you're tefillin, okay, if you're gonna take a nap in your tefillin, you should take it in a certain way.
So it's a parallel. It's a parallel. So yeah, and it's gonna come back up. The real line from Brachos is gonna come up in a few lines over here, so you can see exactly that. So now the Gemara is saying that no, you can't rely on someone else. What can you rely on? Biology. Right, if you're napping, and by the way, I'll confess to having extensive experience, not with that seems very uncomfortable and awkward, but, and other people think this is, right, my hands down, my head is incredibly awkward, but it's what I learned in yeshiva. Okay, so I can tell you that when you put your head down just on your hands, you tend to get a lot less sleep for your Shabbos nap than when you might lie down on a couch or on a bed. Okay, anyone ever experiment with this? There's a very basic difference between the two. At least for me, I typically will automatically wake myself up after 15 minutes or something like that, as opposed to I don't even need the alarm clock. So there's a basic look between them. Okay, now according to this answer of the Gemara, Meiniach Rosho Ben Birkov, right, it would appear as what? I didn't ask you to practice it. What? It's not.
She's
like, that's a perfect opportunity. I'm ready. I'm just testing the sugya. Okay. just acting it out. Okay. So it would still seem, though, it would appear that, so what were we saying? We're saying by tefillin that was the case, and that's why it was okay. So again, miniach rosho, appointing someone else would seem as usher by sukkah, but according to this answer, miniach rosho bin birkav, what would the halacha be? Right, that it would be okay, probably even by the case of sukkah. Again, according to this Gemara, there's this line in the Gemara, there's no distinction between sukkah and tefillin, because it's all about a gzeira shema yoredim that applies equally to the two. And the question is where it's okay and where it's not okay. Right, so that's one answer. Rava Amar, Rava has a different shot than Ravashi. It says, Ein keva l'shena. What's shot? Ein keva l'shena.
There's no distinction between Arai, keva, and Arai.
Good. So he's saying, when it comes to Se'udah, you can distinguish between the two. Right, so it kind of goes back to your point, like, how do you draw the line? What's a qualitatively different sleep than something else?
Yeah.
When it comes to eating, you can really, for example, in halach, we do this all the time with regard to eating, right? Hamotzi, right? That's very different than mizonos, than above a Kissenden is sort of an in-between category between the two, and it depends on how you're reading and how it's made and so on and so forth. And then you have a whole hierarchy with regard to brachos that allow us to objectify and to draw lines and gradations in different categories of achila and shtia to a significant degree as well. You have baruch pirag often versus regular shahakal and so on and so forth. But when it comes to sleep, is there really qualitative difference? This in kevel shena, and therefore it all has to be the same thing. So that's a different answer. And according to Rava, obviously we would assume that there is no practical difference between any different kinds of sleep. It would all be usur. Okay, and then the Gemara quotes, and this Levi is you were alluding to earlier, right? The Gemara Brachos Rala. Here, Tani Chada Yashin Adam Betzilin Shein Asarayv Lo Shein Askeva. V'Tani Idach Bin Kevah. Quickly, Bin Kevah Bin Arayv. V'Tani Idach Lo Kevah Lo Arayv. So Gemara says there's a three-way stira with regard to tefillin. One opinion is that you can't do anything. One opinion is you can do everything. You can sleep even in Shein Askevas. And the third opinion is distinguishing between Shein Asarayv and Shein Askeva. So how do we understand? The Gemara says there are three different scenarios. Lokash adnak lahu bi yadeh. This is a case where he took them in his hands. What's the halacha then?
What?
Right? The tefillin. If you hold the tefillin in your hands, then it's always, and you can sleep. If you're not actually wearing them, the chashash for degradation of the tefillin is not as high, and therefore, I think, if I remember correctly, that's going to be the most, that's going to be the most kal case, right? Hodeman chiva resha, right? And then a second case is when what? Right, man chibereshe, right? They're just on your head. That's sort of an in-between case. Ha de pares sudra ilave. If you, what?
That would be the most kal, right?
That would be, I have to check Rashi. There actually might be a Machlokes, I don't remember of him.
Even in contact.
It could be. The Chatvain, okay.
It's on his head or by his head?
What?
It's on his head?
On his head.
By his
on his head.
Head.
On his head.
So why would that be more than, why would that be less than if he's...
The point is it's going to impact on your ability to guard the tefillin. Depending on where they're situated. Good. Leave it. I don't want to focus on the students. Really, side point. Really, when it comes to this, the chamashin asarai tani rami barichezka kidei hiloch me'ama. Okay. So now we have to walk. Okay. So Aviv, now you have your next experiment. You have to walk 100 amos to figure out how long an ama is in practice, and then you have to walk 100 amos, and that will be your distinction between shein askeva and a shein asarai. Okay. So ad kan the gemara. So basically, the gemara gives these two explanations. You have Ravashi and you have Ravan. Maybe according to Ravashi, there's one scenario, v'niach rosho bim birkav, where one would conclude that it's permissible to sleep outside the sukkah. But basically, the Gemara says that a shein asarai, the Gemara concludes, would be asar chutz la sukkah. And this all raises a number of questions, but the basic question that it raises is that for many, many hundreds of years, it was not the common practice for most people to sleep in a sukkah. Today in America, right, you would say that it's probably, it depends on the community and so on and so forth, but there are some who sleep in a sukkah, but it's far from considered to be a given that even someone who only eats regular meals in a sukkah would necessarily also only sleep in a sukkah, right? This is strange. In fact, right, it would seem to be halachically inconsistent and highly problematic. But it's not something that just came up in 2017 in America. For hundreds of years, the poskim have noted that already at the time of Rishonim that it was common for many people who were generally fairly meticulous with regard to mitzvos, they were not sleeping in the sukkah. And the question is, why not, A? And B, how does this play out, b'zman hazeh? And the fact that on the one hand you have the Gemara, but on the other hand you have Minag Yisrael, at least Minag of many members of Klal Yisrael, is that a limud zechus for nowadays? How should we approach this? Is there a distinction between your stage of life? Are there differences? Or depends on the weather outside? Is that going to be a factor? If you're in Eretz Yisrael, it's much more comfortable in Sukkot than in other places, right? And so on and so forth. How do we navigate this whole issue? So this became a discussion, and probably the classic Rishon to directly address this issue is the Mordechai. The Mordechai is Rabbeinu Hillel of Verona, I believe, and the Mordechai says as follows, here in more or less on the spot, in the back of the Gemara. He says, V'ochen shows us, this is Remez Tafshin Mem Aleph, 741. He says, V'ochen v'achilas rechutz la'sukah, say quotes a Tosefet, that's relevant to halachas of eating outside the sukkah. If you go to the next page, we'll have to read that. We'll actually come back to that tomorrow. It's going to be important for the sukkah of eating in the sukkah. So he says, second line in the next page, V'mikomakom in levarech leishe v'sukkah. He says, when eating a small amount of food, you shouldn't say leishe v'sukkah, fine. The gam maskinan bishmaitim. We also conclude in our sugya she asr lishan chutz la sukkah, that it's asr to sleep outside the sukkah. So he says, right? So what's going on? How do we understand the practice nowadays? Achin sumchin ha'olam adavarza. So he says, what? What's the pshat? Why is the quote unquote olam, right? When people say the olam, right? That goes way back, right? The Mordechai, the Gemara uses it. Right? The Mordechai says, well, what about the olam, right? Or as they would say in Yiddish, the velt, right? What do they rely on? Al davar zeh. So he explains, she yirei minat sina. That's right. Yirei minat sina. Right, Yireim, right? They're afraid of what? What's Tzina? Cool. Right, what it usually is in this room, okay? Pretty cold, okay? Yireim and Tzina, they're uncomfortable, they're pretty cold, right? That's what he says. The Have, he says, is two variations of the same thing to explain this halakhically. Either it's like a chola, someone who's ill, or kimit shemitzdair, right? The pater minasukah. And to such an individual is pater min hasukah. So one of these two ideas, that the basis for the kula, is that it's cold outside. Okay, now, the Mordechai, right, is writing in Western Europe, right? You know, depending on where you are, right? He's not a Sephardi Rishon. Sephardim are writing in Spain. Spain tended to be a warmer climate, right? If you look at the map, right, it's further south. Right, he's writing, I believe, in Germany. Right? So depending on where you are in Germany, I think he was in the northern parts, I believe that's where it was, it's a little bit chillier, right? You could imagine that if you're living in White Russia or Siberia or something like that, right? It was even colder, right? So there's good reason now, he's saying, that that's the pshat. Now, what's the difference in eating? By that token, shouldn't we be making on eating? What's the difference? What's the difference between sleeping and eating?
It's sleeping for much longer.
Yeah, I mean, right? So it's much easier to get sick. You're exposed to the elements for longer. If you're eating, you can go in and out. You're going to be done. So that's the defense of the Mordechai. We're going to have to see, right, if that's going to hold up. We have to see if that's going to hold up. All right, that's what he says. The Ramah also offers a different defense, his own, right? Very often the Ramah or the Mechaber are quoting earlier opinions, and here the Ramah does exactly that, but he also gives an original Ramah explanation in addition to the defense of the Mordechai. So if you take a look at Taf Reish Lamed Tes Beis, so first the Mechaber quotes the halacha of eating outside the sukkah and sleeping outside the sukkah. See where it says Haga?
Yeah.
So comes along the Ramah. That which we have the practice to be lenient with regards to sleeping, it's a little bit different. The Mordechai sound like he was saying what? That probably nobody sleeps in the sukkah. The Ramah is saying, who sleeps in the sukkah? Right, only the medakti can be mitzvos. But everyone else, right, unless you're like a cut above, like a really, really, right, medakti, the kala kavachamura kind of person, where generally speaking was not common to sleep in the sukkah. So let's try. So yesho mimishim tzina diyesh tza'ar lisham vimkomo sakarim. It's physically painful, and it cites the Mordechai here in the note. The linear, the Rama says, I have my own pshat. What's my pshat? Says the Rama, mishum de mitzvahs sukkah. Ishu Veso. What is the mitzvah? To live in the sukkah like you live in your house, right? On what basis? What principle? This is a member from last week.
Yeah.
Those are here. What? Okay, so marriage, and what's the larger principle that teaches? What? Teshu Kentaduru, right? You have to, right? Correct. You have to live in the sukkah. Whatever you're saying, right? Good. Tip of your tongue. Right? You're going to live in the sukkah just like you live in your own home. So you don't live on your own. If you're married, you live together with your wife, you live together with your family, right? The mitzvah sukkah, ishu veso. The ish, the ishto. Kider shudar kalashana. Uvimakum shal yuchal ishonim ishto. She in lo sukkum yuchedah. He says, wait a second. Most people don't have two different sukkot. One for general family use, and here I have my own private sukkah over there, some private location. That's not the norm. So he says, since that doesn't exist, right? And by the way, that may be what he means, but he might mean something else, as some have pointed out. Sukkah miyuchedet might just mean a personal sukkah. It was very common in many communities in Eastern Europe for there to be just one communal sukkah, one very big sukkah. The Gemara says in Sukkah Nef Chavzayin, Kol Yisrael Ruyin Leishay B'Sukkah Achad. Everyone can fit, right? There's room for everyone, right? It's a very Hamish kind of feel. So what are you going to do? A person's going to go on.
24 persons. Okay.
What? Right?
Like we all need a 24-quarter.
Yeah. Try that before. Okay, right? So what are you going to do? You know, everyone's going to go. I understand, like a, you know, Ben Yeshiva, you're going to go out to the, you're going to go out to the sukkah and everyone's going to sleep together. That's one thing. What are you going to do? Ishvi ishto, married couples are going to go out. That's obviously not appropriate. So it could be that in lo sukkah miyuchedes does not mean a second personal sukkah, but it means any personal sukkah. It's a tricky kind of thing. Right? Also, that might depend on whether you have kids. If you have kids who also want to sleep in the sukkah, that also makes it a little bit more complicated. Right? There, too, there's a tznius issue. So either way, right, he says, maybe that's the defense. He says, therefore, potter. So then he says, well, if you can, it's a good thing to do. It's good to go out if your wife is up for it. So you can have a separate sukkah, but what he doesn't say here, but is appropriate to say, to add as well, is that right, it's not something that one should force. One's right, just like, right, don't, it's not the proper practice. But either way, the basic defense of the Rama is it's a sort of a variation on Teshu Kein Tadur. So you can tell me, are there any nafkaminas between the Mordechai and the Rama? Two defenses. Okay, right, so in the case of the Mordechai, it might depend on the climate. Very good. What would the Mordechai say about America?
Do it.
Do it.
Well, if it's not raining, if it's not snowing.
It's not Israel. It's not. Right? Just depending on the time of year, depending on how the calendar, if it's the leap year, the year before, how late it is. Fine. Okay. We should be serious about mitzvahs and we do it. Okay. Good. And what about according to the Rama? Right, obviously.
And ask your wife.
Right? This is what's the nafkamina? And it's for him, it's going
to
be. In other words, according to the Rama, it's going to there'd be a basic distinction, first of all, between someone who's single and someone who's married. Right? In other words, when it comes to a single person, the Rama's defense obviously is inapplicable. Teishu came to do you, sleep in your room in your house, or you're going to go sleep in your own in your sukkah. Right? But when it comes to a married individual, right, that already might be a different kind of thing. So you can see these are, and by the way, it's extremely common for poskim on the basis of the Rama. That's what it's very often, you'll see exactly this. Right, B'nai Yeshiva are very often encouraged to sleep in the sukkah. One person is married, that's already a different situation. For some people who go out ish v'ishtel, but that's much, much less common, both because it can make someone uncomfortable, and you don't want to coerce your wife who's exempt from doing this, and shown by you should take precedence, and so on and so on.
Are we saying that if you want to fulfill the mitzvah, then you have to go into the sukkah with your wife, or can you leave your wife? You have to go sleep inside because that's where your wife's going to be. And then it says, okay, fine, if your wife is up for it, you know, both of you sleep in the sukkah, awesome.
It's an excellent question. In other words, and there are some achronim who pick up on this and they say, yeah, maybe, right, because there's a problem here. You are pointing to it, and it's even bigger than that. Right? What's the problem? The problem is like this. So we said before, Teshu Kein Tadur, right? That the mitzvah of sukkah requires that I live in the sukkah like I live in my home. So as soon as you say that, what that might mean is that if, as Lior is saying, if I'm living in my sukkah, not in that way, I'm not yotzei the mitzvah. We said last time that you have to, right, that you have to bring your kelim, right? You have to bring your kelim na'im, and you learn the sukkah, you tie up the sukkah. Some go even further. What if my sukkah is not fit for me to live in it as I live in my own home?
Like a pop-up sukkah.
Right? Maybe it shouldn't be a kosher sukkah. Mm. What if, right? Let's say I build a sukkah in a place where it's devastatingly cold. Is that really a dira? Is it really possible to say teishu kein tadur in such a place? You shouldn't see now. It's freezing. Is that really going to work? Let's say I have a tiny sukkah. I have enough room to eat in it, but I don't have enough room to sleep in it. Not so simple. Teishu kein tadur. Let's say I have a sukkah that doesn't have enough room for my wife. It's not so simple. And a lot of the Achronim actually ask this question because it's a din Shulchan Aruch. So if you jump for a second to source 10, you'll see something really unbelievable. Exactly this point. Check this out. Look at the Rama there. Tafresh Mem Dalet. It says like this. Hagah. V'masa mitzchila b'magh. The Shulchan Aruch quoted the Kula of Mitzdayer. Okay, Lior, thank you for sending us this way. Okay? Well, it says like this. Right? Mechaber quoted the halacha mitzar. If you're mitzar, you're pater mitzar. This Ramah, unbelievable. Agav. V'masa mitchila v'makom shemitzta'er ba'achila o'b'shdiya o'b'shena. Let's say you build your sukkah in a place that's physically uncomfortable for basic function. So says the Ramah, O'shiyev shalo la'asos echa mehem ba'sukkah machmas misyare mi'listim o'ganoving shu ba'sukkah. It says, Eno Yotze the Osa Sukkakla. He says, take the logic of Teshu Kein Tadiru to its logical conclusion. He says, if you really take seriously, this has to be a Dira Sarai, then if you really are not able to function in the Sukkah, then maybe it should be Apostle Sukkah. So the Achronim come along, they ask this question on the Mordechai, and they ask this question on the Ramah. And it's basically a variation of what Lior just said. They said, right, by your logic, right, take it to its logical conclusion. Right? If you want to say, not only are you saying, is this reason to say that you are exempt from sitting in this or sleeping in the sukkah, right? If you can't sleep in the sukkah, the Ramah said, it's not a sleepable sukkah, then what is it? It's not a sukkah at all. So don't just exempt people, you should say that this is not. So sometimes it's possible to try to give a defense of a halacha that's almost too good. Right? Yeah, right? Aviv has this problem all this time, right? All the time. It's like, he's not just really good, he's too good, right? He's too good, right? It's the same thing over here. The Mordechai's too good, the Ramah's too good. They're so good that they said that, right? Not only am I not obligated to sleep in the sukkah, I'm not able to do anything in the sukkah anymore. Unbelievable. Number of Achronim asked exactly this question. I'm not going inside, but if you're interested, you can take a look. The Magen Avraham in Source 5 asks this question, and he grapples with this issue. I mean, the answer seems to be that it's possible for there to be a midpoint, where what we're saying is, bidochak, it's possible to function on a basic level in this sukkah, but it's not to the point that we're going to obligate you. Apparently you have to say that. And you can prove that, because what are you going to really say? Let's take this. If you really take this logical conclusion, then if I live in Rebassman, where'd you go vacationing again?
Iceland.
Yes. Yeah. What? Iceland, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. So what's the weather in Iceland on Sukkot?
Rainy.
Is it freezing?
It's 50 right now.
No, on Sukkot.
I'm not sure.
Probably pretty, imagine it's pretty cold, right?
Does it seem like citizens?
And then they misname it Iceland, so people would.
It's not really that. Greenland is colder than Iceland. Okay, fine. So next time, okay? So what are you going to say? Are you really going to say that if you live on, in some of these northern or southern, right? Southern has really, really cold climates, frigid climates. Or close to the equator, something like that. That it's impossible to climb the sukkah entirely? It's a bracha levatala, because you can't sleep in your sukkah, because you won't be comfortable. It's a bracha levatala, because you can't eat all that comfortably in your sukkah. You can't be in the kind of midst of sukkah if you live...
In Dallas.
What? Right. Okay. Like in Bavel. Or...
Okay. I don't know.
I didn't say
it. I don't even touch it.
Okay. New? So what do you say, right? New? What do you think? What do you say? What's trot? Right?
Torah.
Okay?
Torah.
Obviously.
Torah.
Right. Hey. Everyone will agree. Right? What's the halacha? Right? That's in other words, if you really take this idea to its logical extreme, you're going to end up saying that a lot of people in a lot of countries can never be mekayem in the midst of sukkah, which just seems
except
a little bit crazy. What?
Except for one.
Except for one.
Country.
One country and only one country. We've already determined. Make aliyah. Okay. So the, right? So.
Oops.
Yeah, so that seems a little bit far. So my point is, al korchach, you have to say that there's some midpoint. And once you say that there's some midpoint, then you have to say there's a point at which you can say, well, you're exempt, or at least there's limited chus to exempt you, but it's still going to be a kosher sukkah. But it's a tricky kind of balance to have to do.
We're saying al korchach based on an emotional appeal.
More experiments. Yeah.
Through an emotional appeal, we're saying al korchach. We're not saying rationally. We're saying we want people to be in the time.
Could be. Right.
You don't have to live. Maybe. You don't have to live in Moscow.
If you're born there your whole life and you live.
Okay. Right. Like there. It's right.
And you could just move.
It's hard.
That every century was,
okay. It's hard to. Hey, give me a couple minutes. What? You're gonna, yeah, we're gonna talk a little bit. All right, thank you. Okay, so just to, okay, good. So that's the basic framework. Just a couple of tashlumin, and we'll call it a shir for the day. If you take a look at the Taz in Source 7, the Taz has a variation on this theme. He says that there is sort of like the Rambam, but a little bit different. Not a din of tishu kein tzaru. He says that there's another mitzvah of the mesameach of ishto beregel. Why? Because there's a general halacha of simchas regel, simchas yontif, and one of the halachos, one of the aspects of simchas yontif is to be mesameach es ishto. So he says there is such an obligation. He says that, and women, of course, are exempt from the mitzvah of sukkos. So he says that it's impossible to achieve that if the couple is not together. Now, it's not 100% clear how he's saying it, but he might be saying something along the lines of osik b'mitzvah pater mitzvah or something like that. Right? In other words, that there's some, right? Or maybe it's another way of getting to tishu kein tzaru. It's not 100% clear, and you can take a look at it, but it sounds like it's more than that. In other words, it's not just tishu kein tzaru, it's that there's a prior obligation that's docha, the mitzvah of sukkah, and that's how the Taz wants to explain it. He doesn't like the Rama's explanation, he doesn't particularly like the Mordechai, if I remember correctly, either. And that's the Taz has this variation on the Rama. Third explanation, but halach l'maisa would be similar. You draw the same distinction between a ben yeshiva and someone who is married. I gave you as well the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan really likes the... Where did the Aruch HaShulchan live? Lives in Eastern Europe. Okay, it's cold climate, and he also really likes drawn to the Tzina, to the Mordechai's explanation. And there's I didn't give it to you here, but it's very interesting. He uses this in another place to justify those who have the practice to avoid sitting a sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, right? Because this is also a problem. Right? There's another area where there's just an outright stira between. Right, what we have in the Gemara, and common practice among some, especially among Hasidim, but not only among Hasidim, but predominantly developed among Hasidim. What's the problem? The Gemara says explicitly that there's an obligation to sit, if not to say bracha, on Shmini Atzeres, right? In Galus, of course, we're talking about Eretz Yisrael, right? How do we know? The Gemara says explicitly, Yesuve Yasvinan, we have to sit, Bruchilum Varchino, we don't make a bracha. Right? And yet the practice felt not to say it, not to do that. So what's pshat? So some say that the Gemara is rhetorical. Okay, they say the Gemara is not saying Yisuve Yasvinan Beruchei Lo Mevarchinan. The Gemara is saying Yisuve Yasvinan Beruchei Lo Mevarchinan. What kind of absurdity is this? That makes no sense whatsoever. LMI, of course you have to, right? Either you sit all the way or you don't sit at all. We don't have to sit at all. Okay? That is, well, that's very different reading the Gemara. It's also, right, it's also a joke. It's not a serious reading of the Gemara. It's actually a way that people make fun of that opinion, because you can't really read the Gemara that way at all, right? So it really is difficult. The Gemara pretty clearly says it. It's like, why not? So a number of different explanations, but one of the classic explanations is Mishun Sina. And the Aruch HaShulchan actually uses it to justify. It's the same Shita. It's the same Aruch HaShulchan. All ultimately goes back to the Mordechai's justification as well. The Aruch HaShulchan elsewhere is not here. But he says also, well, it's based on the same Svara. Just like I said, that there's a limud zchus for those who don't sleep in the sukkah, Mishum Sina, so too that can be used to justify Shmini Atzeres, which itself is not one of the primary obligations, is already an additional level of Chumrah, and therefore there might be a basis for Kula. Just to wrap up, going to pieces of the Shemura, but it's not really totally essential for us. But Halach Lamaisa, how does this play itself out? So my strong recommendation to everyone would be, indeed, that although there is basis for limud zechus, and I would never judge anyone who relies on that, because it was very common at the time of the Rishonim, and the Rama justifies it, and there's certainly more than yesh almi lesmoch. And when it comes to someone who's married, my recommendation, strong recommendation, is to sleep in the house unless one's wife is very much makbid on this particular mitzvah. But for someone who is unmarried, I think that the appropriate thing is, unless one is in up in Greenland with Aviv for the upcoming Yantif Sukkot, apparently, short of that, I think it's appropriate certainly to sleep in the Sukkah. Just one final he'ara, if you're interested, I gave you in last source, if you want to take a look. This is quoted in the name of the Truma Sadesh, one of the great Yishonim, Mr. Serlin, and he actually gets into the discussion, asks the question we're kind of discussing past days, sort of, which is more important, the sleeping versus the eating question. Sort of grappling with that whole issue. And he goes so far as to say that not only is sleeping essential, he has a major chiddush. He says, we're going to see, in God willing, on Thursday, there's a special mitzvah to eat in the sukkah almost in all situations on the first night. So it comes along comes along the Truma Sadeshan, and he says something remarkable. He says, where do we learn that halacha? Which is Taser Mustakam. How do we know it's a special obligation to eat in the sukkah on the first night, even more so than the other nights? Where's the Gemara learning from? It's a Gzera Shava. Anyone know where the Gzera Shava is from? Excellent, good. Tesvav. 2-2, right? Tesvav. Just like Barat Tochlu Matzos, so too this special mitzvah to eat in the sukkah. We're going to see that the Rishonim and Achronim have a field day with this halacha. How far do we take this? Do we apply like all the halachos of and so there's even one opinion that says that it's preferable to eat, I kid you not, to eat matzah in the sukkah on the first night of sukkahs, because after all it's a gzera shava, and there's a very profound connection between the first night of Pesach and the first night of sukkahs. So we don't go that far off.
So halacha
l'maisa, you have to eat matzah.
That's a pretty remarkable kind of thing.
No, right. I mean, you buy that. But in terms of the positive obligation of eating, it's a what we call a reductio ad absurdum. You're right. Like, once you say it, you come to seemingly absurd conclusions, but there's such a view out there. So the Truma Sadeshan says a combination of two things. It says, number one, it's a special mitzvah to eat on the first night, and it's learned from Pesach. It says, by Pesach, there's a halacha. What are you not allowed to do on Erev Pesach? We all know. What are you not allowed to do on Erev Pesach? You're not allowed to eat matzah, right? We extend it, right? Chametz is true as well, but also, right, matzah. Why? Because there's a different thing, right? Yerushalmi is an explanation, or the idea of the Rambam says, let's say, oven, that you should really be hungry for it. So, right, something like that. Kabbalah is
chametz.
Okay, all
matzah.
What? Right, right. That's a sort of another way of assisting similar kind of thing. You remember, very good. Okay, excellent. So, Truma Sadeshan, yeah, there's a Rabbeinu Tam like that. Right, Ian, yeah, there's a Rabbi Natan says you can go. Very good. So Tafsos, we have our himself. Very good. Anyhow, so the Truma Sadeshan goes so far as to say that similarly he says that since he says that the same halacha extends from eating to sleeping. He says, what's the ikar dira b'sukkah? It's not eating, it's rather sleeping. That is the essence, because even more chamor, because he says even Shenas Arai, not just Shenas Kappa. So the Truma Sadeshan goes so far as to say that you shouldn't take a nap. Shouldn't nap on Erev Sukkot. Why?
So you can
sleep
in
your sukkah.
So you get a great sleep in your
sukkah.
Wow. Okay. So, it's pretty, I mean, it's a big chiddush.
But it's like,
I don't know, we obviously don't have
Pesach,
right?
You need to take that pre-Pesach nap so to be able to make it.
That's only if you're a katzah.
Is it hiddur sleeping, or is it like so you can sleep?
It's so that the sleeping can be litziyon one. Like a really good schmack. You should really, really sleep. You should have a very deep sleep. Okay, right, there you go. There's your REM sleep. Yes.
Who would which McCullough
would stay up for 3 nights?
Most strongly imply that if you're not comfortable at all, then you're probably not
yotze. Not comfortable. Even the Shulchan Aruch paskin that way that we saw in Tafreshman. Yeah, good. So anyhow, we don't paskin like Truma Sadeshan, but it brings home the idea that we are accustomed, as we said yesterday, for the Iker to really be viewed as the Achila, but the Shema is an essential part of Dira V'sukkah. So even if you don't go so far as paskin like the Truma Sadeshan, the idea that someone who's not married should really make this a priority, and that Shema V'sukkah really is an essential part of the Kiyum HaMitzvah, I think is beautifully illustrated by this remarkable position of Truma Sadeshan, and I think by the Sugya Bechlal Yasher Kochachem.
Let's go ahead.